to sermons. This is episode 55, entitled Fog Machines and Floodlights. We're starting in Numbers chapter 9, verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the first month of the second year after they were come out of the land of Egypt, saying, Let the children of Israel also keep the Passover at his appointed season. Now, you probably didn't realize it, but this is a flashback, since back in chapter 1, when the Yahwehlians ordered Moses to take the census and set up the selective service system, it was already the second month of the second year. And this is harking back to the first month of the second year. We shouldn't assume that the Bible is in strict chronological order all the time. It has flashbacks. So what did the Lord spake unto Moses on this earlier occasion? He told him to let the children of Israel keep the Passover at his appointed season. And his, the King James Version uses his instead of its for some reason. And the his in this case refers to Passover, not to the Lord. So what is Passover's appointed season? Well, it's in the spring, usually on the first full moon after the vernal equinox. Occasionally it'll be the second full moon. In the 14th day of this month, at even, you shall keep it in its appointed season, according to all the rites of it, and according to all the ceremonies thereof shall you keep it. And this is a commemoration of the final plague in Egypt, the one that ultimately got the Israelites released. When the Yahwehlian death squads fanned out across Egypt and went door to door and murdered the firstborn son in every house except the houses where the doorposts were painted with blood, which they passed over. And that's where Passover gets its name. And Moses spake unto the children of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month at even in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so did the children of Israel. And there were certain men who were defiled by the dead body of a man, that they could not keep the Passover on that day. And they came before Moses and before Aaron on that day. And those men said unto him, We are defiled by the dead body of a man. Wherefore are we kept back, that we may not offer an offering of the Lord in his appointed season among the children of Israel? And Moses said unto them, Stand still, and I will hear what the Lord will command concerning you. Now when he says stand still, I think that means wait here. I'm going in the tabernacle and talk to the Lord, you know. The Lord talks to me from the mercy seat atop the Ark of the Covenant on the other side of the veil from where I'll be standing. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, If any man of you or of your posterity shall be unclean by reason of a dead body, or be in a journey afar off, yet he shall keep the Passover unto the Lord. The 14th day of the second month at even they shall keep it, and eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. So if they'd been around a dead body, so they couldn't observe Passover at the normal time, or if they were off on a trip somewhere, they got to delay their observance for a month. They shall leave none of it until the morning, nor break any bone of it. According to all the ordinances of the Passover, they shall keep it. But the man that is clean and is not in a journey and forbeareth to keep the Passover, even the same soul shall be cut off from among his people, because he brought not the offering of the Lord in his appointed season. That man shall bear his sin. So you couldn't just put it off for your own personal reasons. It had to be because you couldn't observe it at the normal time. And if a stranger shall sojourn among you, and will keep the Passover unto the Lord, according to the ordinance of the Passover, and according to the manner thereof, so shall he do. Ye shall have one ordinance, both for the stranger and for him that was born in the land. So stranger means foreigner in this case. And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle. namely the tent of the testimony. And at even there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until the morning. So it was always, the cloud covered it by day, and the appearance of fire by night. Now remember, back in Exodus, it was a pillar of cloud by day and of fire by night that led them out of Egypt and led them across the wilderness and across the Red Sea. They made a little wrong turn there. They were supposed to go around the Red Sea, but they miscalculated. And ultimately, to Mount Sinai. Now, I believe that this pillar of smoke and fire was an active volcano in the land of Midian that was always visible ahead of them in the distance, you know, as a landmark. It was lit up at night from eruptions or lava flows, and during the day they could see the cloud of smoke, you know, boiling out of the top of the volcano. You know, it was just a convenient landmark to guide them to their destination. It wasn't out front moving ahead of them, I don't think. They could just always see it in the distance. And their destination was Mount Sinai. When they got there, the Yahwehlians descended in another pillar of smoke and fire, which might make you think that Mount Sinai itself was the volcano, but actually, I think that this pillar of smoke and fire was the Yahwehlian rocket ship landing on a plateau on the top of the mountain. And now, this tabernacle being covered by a cloud during the day and being lit up at night appears to be something else yet again. I don't think it was a cloud of smoke this time, because you know, if it had been smoke, the priests would have been constantly coughing, sneezing, and hacking and carrying on while they performed their duties. I think it was something a little more benign than smoke, like fog. Maybe the Yahwehlians put something in the Holy of Holies that generated fog. Now, I don't think they used dry ice, because dry ice-generated fog is a cool fog. Yeah, it's a cool fog, you know, you see it on stage sometimes, it looks cool. But I mean cool temperature-wise, you know, which means that it stays near the ground or near the floor. But you can use other substances other than dry ice. For instance, glycol. That'll generate a warmer fog that'll tend to rise. I found out about this from a website called LimelightProductions.com. I think maybe they do like rock shows and so on. They had a page on this site called How Fog Machines Work. I'll read you a little bit from it. Today, most fluid-based fog machines work by rapidly heating a mixture of water and glycol, producing a vapor. The expanding vapor is forced out of a nozzle where the warm, moist vapor mixes with the cooler air to form fog. Because the fog produced by this method is warmer than the surrounding atmosphere, it tends to rise as it disperses. I'll skip a little bit. By controlling the on time of a fog machine, the amount of fog can be controlled, creating effects ranging from a wisp to a virtually opaque cloud. Which will remain or linger for a significant time. Now, at night, all the Yahwehlians would have to do to produce the fire effect, once they've got this fog cloud, is to shine some floodlights down on the column of fog. And you can see maybe what something like that would look like in the show art. See, remember, the verse only says that it had the appearance of fire, not that there was any actual fire involved. This same web page, this LimelightProductions.com web page, says that many of these fluid-based fog machines are smaller than your typical microwave oven. They're quite portable, and they operate off a single 15-amp electrical outlet. Well, they didn't have electrical outlets in the wilderness. But a battery-powered unit would have fit comfortably inside the Ark of the Covenant and still left room for other needed equipment. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. And when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that, the children of Israel journeyed. So when it was time to move on, the Yahwehians would switch off the fog machine. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. So when they got to the place where they were supposed to encamp again, the Yahwehians would switch on the fog machine inside the ark remotely and, produce a heavy cloud indicating where they were supposed to set up the tabernacle again. At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. And when the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle, many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was, when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents, and according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from even unto the morning, and that the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. So whenever they switched off the fog machine and the floodlights, the Israelites would pull up stakes and move on. Or whether it were 2 days or a month or a year that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon, the children of Israel abode in their tents and journeyed not. But when it was taken up, they journeyed. It's kind of repetitive, isn't it? At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in the tents, and at the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. And that's the end of chapter 9. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Make thee 2 trumpets of silver, of a whole piece shalt thou make them, that thou mayest use them for the calling of the assembly and for the journeying of the camps. So they had at least 2 different bugle calls, assembly, and boots and saddles. And when they shall blow with them, all the assembly shall assemble themselves to thee at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And if they blow but with 1 trumpet, then the princes, which are heads of the thousands of Israel, shall gather themselves unto thee. So the assembly bugle call, called a general assembly if it was played by 2 trumpets, but if it was only played by 1 trumpet, it called just the princes together. When ye blow an alarm, then the camps that lie on the east parts shall go forward. So I guess after boots and saddles had already been signaled, I don't mean literally boots and saddles, I'm just saying some counterpart to that, this alarm bugle calls started putting the troops in motion. It's like charge, basically. Do I have charge? When ye blow an alarm the 2nd time, then the camps that lie on the south side shall take their journey. They shall blow an alarm for their journeys. But when the congregation is to be gathered together, ye shall blow, but ye shall not sound an alarm. And the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow with the trumpets, and they shall be to you for an ordinance forever throughout your generations. And if ye go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresseth you, then ye shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and ye shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and ye shall be saved from your enemies. So it is like charge. The alarm is like charge. Also, in the day of your gladness, and in your solemn days, and in the beginnings of your months, ye shall blow with the trumpets over your burnt offerings, and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they may be to you for a memorial before your God. I am the Lord your God. And it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year that the cloud was taken up from off the tabernacle of the testimony. That's interesting that in the commentaries, there's a little bit of a controversy over whether the cloud covered the whole tent of the tabernacle or just the part over the Holy of Holies. And I think it was concentrated over the Holy of Holies because that's where the Ark of the Covenant was. And I think the fog machine was inside the Ark. But depending on the amount of glycol that was being used, it could have, or whatever they used, it could have produced enough rising fog to cover the entire tabernacle. And the children of Israel took their journeys out of the wilderness of Sinai, and the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran. And they first took their journey according to the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. In the first place went the standard of the camp of the children of Judah according to their armies, and over his host was Nashon the son of Amminadab. And over the host of the tribe of the children of Issachar was Nethaneel the son of Zuar. Thus were the journeyings of the children of Israel according to their armies when they set forward. And Moses said unto Hobab, the son of Raguel the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, we are journeying unto the place of which the Lord said, I will give it you. Come thou with us, and we will do thee good, for the Lord hath spoken good concerning Israel. This was Moses talking to his father-in-law. Raguel is apparently just an alternate spelling of Reuel, who was identified as Moses' father-in-law back in Exodus. Jethro was also identified as his father-in-law. And most people know him as Jethro, but it's not always clear in the Bible what is a name and what is a title or a nickname. Now, some people have multiple names, you know, like Jacob and Israel. And some mountains do, too. I've talked before about how Mount Sinai and Mount Horeb appear to be just two different names for the same mountain. But, you know, that may not actually be the case. One name could be the name of the individual mountain, and one could be the name for the mountain range. You know, it's a controversy whether Noah's Ark came to rest on a single Mount Ararat or in the mountains of Ararat, a mountain range. Similarly, Mount Horeb could be an individual mountain in the mountain range of Sinai, or maybe vice versa. Or they could be two individual mountains in the same range. If they're two different mountains, they could be Jabal al-Laws and Jabal Makla, which are the two highest mountains in northwest Saudi Arabia, which used to be called Midian. Jabal Makla means burnt mountain, and it was so named because of the black igneous rock, you know, igneous meaning formed by fire, that's around the top of the mountain. Lower down, it's a lighter color brown. You know, all this is interesting when you think about that Yahwehian ship descending in smoke and fire. Could that be what blackened the top of Burnt Mountain, Jabal Makla? And he said unto him, I will not go, but I will depart to mine own land and to my kindred. This is Raguel or Reuel or Jethro speaking to Moses and saying, sorry, I'm not going to make the trip. And he said, well, Moses said, leave us not, I pray thee, for as much as thou knowest how we are to encamp in the wilderness, and thou mayest be to us instead of eyes. And it shall be, if thou go with us, yea, it shall be, that what goodness the Lord shall do unto us, the same will we do unto thee. And they departed from the mount of the Lord 3 days' journey, and the ark of the covenant of the Lord went before them in the 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. The ark went before them to search out a resting place for them. Tell me that it didn't have some sort of artificial intelligence. Or at the very least, that it was, you know, transmitting video and other signals back to the Yahwehlian ship where there was intelligence, artificial or otherwise, that could make those decisions. And the cloud of the Lord was upon them by day when they went out of the camp, emanating from the ark, which the previous verse says went before them. The ark went before them and the cloud went before them. Now, how did they indicate when they got to the place where they were supposed to encamp if it was already emanating the cloud? I guess, you know, they turned it up, you know, they increased the amount of glycol that they were spewing out, and that increased the cloud, you know, maybe from a wisp to a nearly opaque cloud, a large opaque cloud, and that would indicate that they were supposed to encamp there. And it came to pass, when the ark set forward, that Moses said, "Rise up, Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before thee." And when it rested, he said, "Return, O Lord, unto the many thousands of Israel." So I don't know if when it rested is talking about the cloud or about the ark, but I really don't think it makes much difference. It kind of amounts to the same thing. And that's the end of chapter 10. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. And the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. Now, this is the same fire of the Lord. You know, it's the same Hebrew word as the fire that went out from the ark and killed Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu. Now, I don't know. This seems kind of like a little overreaction to start killing people just because they start complaining about something. We'll see. And the people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. And he called the name of the place Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burnt among them. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who shall give us flesh to eat?" So when it says they were lusting, they weren't lusting after sex. They were lusting after, well, it says flesh, meat. But wait a minute, they had meat. They have meat, don't they? They're driving their livestock along with them, and they have plenty enough livestock that they can make sacrifices to the Yahwehlians along the way. So couldn't they have slaughtered a few sheep or cows or whatever to have a little mutton or beef or, you know, whatever, goat meat, you know, for their own use? Now, I looked in the commentary to see if anybody commented on this. Now, Matthew Poole's commentary says that, of course, they had brought cattle with them, but they were reserved for breeding stock. Now, I don't know that I buy that, but I guess just eating the kind of meat that they had on the hoof would have gotten old too. I don't think it was so much the meat that they were craving as the variety. And we'll see in this next verse that when you're talking about meat, you're talking about fish, maybe even vegetables, you know, which makes sense because what they call a meat offering, it doesn't really contain meat. "We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic." I'm getting hungry. "But now our soul is dried away. There's nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes." It gets old just eating the same old stuff all the time, whether it's beef or whether it's manna, whatever manna is. And the manna was as coriander seed, and the color thereof as the color of bdellum. And the people went about and gathered it, and ground it in mills, or beat it in a mortar, and baked it in pans, and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. And when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. We still don't know exactly what manna was or is. In fact, the word manna comes from manhu, which literally means, what is it? Well, whatever it was just some sort of subsistence ration to get them through hard times. So naturally, the people were going to long for real food and start complaining. Then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. No kidding. Moses also was displeased. And Moses said unto the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? So what Moses was displeased about, apparently, was not how the food situation created problems for his people, but how it created problems for him personally. Created problems for management. How to manage the people. He goes on in the next verse. Have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them, that thou shouldst say unto me, carry them in thy bosom, as a nursing father beareth the sucking child, unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? So he's like, am I going to have to play nursemaid to these people all the way to the promised land? I didn't birth these people. Now, I don't know what got into the King James translators to come up with something like a nursing father. Ain't no such thing. Unless you're buying this trans ideology, which I don't think was a thing back in Moses' day, or in King James' day either. Nursemaid would have been a lot better. So, am I going to have to play nursemaid? And other translations just say nurse instead of nursing father, which, you know, that's better too. Whence should I have flesh to give unto all this people? Meat. For they weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it is too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of hand, if I have found favor in thy sight, and let me not see my wretchedness. So just kill me now. Well, we're almost out of time, so I guess we'll just have to wait until next time to find out if the Lord just kills him now. Some cliffhanger, huh? Moses has been pretty much the star of the show throughout Exodus, Leviticus, and now Numbers. So how likely is it he's going to get killed off at the start of the next episode? We'll say it's a cliffhanger, but it's not much of one. And we'll find out next time when we'll pick up the story in Numbers 11, verse 16. Until then, keep the faith, eat a balanced diet, and try not to tempt the Lord into just killing you now, because you're not the star of the show.